This is the Bears Barroom Radio Network, and the following program is suitable for all audiences.
Buffon. A certain magic will always linger with the very name. It speaks of courage and fervor in the world's most brutal game. 55, worn by Doug Buffon, a Chicago Bear through and through. He demanded excellence of himself and anyone wearing navy blue.
You tell me what's going on. This is moronic. We're going to get our ass whipped all the way down the line. I want somebody to get kicked in the ass and get out there and play. You're getting paid to play this game. And play it right. I don't mind you getting beat. I got my ass whipped many times. But I tell you, I took somebody down with me. You are a professional team. Act like one, for God's sakes.
Football fans, this is Buffon 55. The John Buffon Show.
Hello and welcome to another edition of Buffon 55, a fast-paced approach at Chicago Bears football analysis. I, of course, am your host, John Buffon. We got a good one for you today, a little different. The main difference is you're not going to hear me clamoring on and on and on for minutes on end. We're actually going to break up the monotony a little bit today. On the show today is an NFL writer for ProFootballWeekly.com, Eric Edholm. Eric, thank you for coming on the show. How you doing today?
Pleasure's mine. Good to join you guys.
Well, now, I'm going to jump right into it because we got a lot of stuff to cover. The first question right out of the gate, big offseason in the NFL, whether you're talking about free agency, whether you're talking about the draft or any other things, some of the controversies going on with rule changes and things like that. To you, you're kind of plugged into the whole atmosphere. What's the biggest offseason story so far in the NFL?
Yeah, I think 2 weeks ago, had you asked me that question, I probably would have said some of these rule changes that include, the tackling rule. I guess when they were enacted, you know, the day before some of the anthem stuff came up, I would have said, how is the new enforcement of the tackling rule, or really the leading with the helmet rule, I guess you'd have to call it, because it includes offensive players. How is that going to affect the NFL teams? I might have even thrown in the kickoff rule, which the NFL seems sort of, hell-bent on getting rid of, or at least phasing out of the game, barring some kind of uptick in safety on those plays. Those two plays, I think, are going to be insignificant. But, obviously, I think the anthem stuff that has come up, really the day after that was put into action. We've known about the rule changes stuff for a few months, I guess. But it's at least added a layer of fascination that I didn't necessarily think was going to be there. And the public seems kind of divided on this thing. Some people like the new policy. Some people despise it. A lot of the players feel kind of betrayed on this thing. So I do think you have to fold that in. Obviously, the rookie quarterbacks are a great story. There's a lot of, free agent movement that has changed the landscape with teams like the Rams and such and the Vikings. But, if we're being honest, I think the anthem stuff has been rekindled to a point that I didn't expect that to be the case.
Well, one thing's for sure, the NFL news cycle never goes bare. There's always something that's going to be in the headlines. So that, at the very least, there's always something to talk about. Let's move on. I mean, this is a Bears podcast. Let's jump into the NFC North. A lot of storylines going on with the Bears. They made some splashes in free agency. They had one of the best drafts. If you talk to people who are grading drafts, if you're into that kind of thing, but splashiness doesn't always equal effectiveness. Let's go into the NFC North. Who do you think had the biggest offseason as far as going into the 2018 season? Who's going to be the most improved?
Yeah, I mean, all four teams underwent some kind of significant change, and coaching changes too. I mean, the Packers, changing coordinators on both sides of the ball. Detroit Lions have a new head coach. The Minnesota Vikings have a new offensive coordinator. We know the Bears obviously sort of redid their staff, starting with Matt Nagy, and what I think is a really impressive coaching staff below him. I mean, he really did as good a job as any new head coach in terms of putting the staff together. So yeah, I think you start with that because that was the first sort of domino to fall. And then you put together what they did in free agency and the draft, and you start looking and you say, boy, this should be an improved team. Whether they can win a ton of more games in this division, I don't know. Obviously, we expect the Packers to kind of bounce back. We think the Vikings are probably going to be, as competitive as they were last year. Again, win totals, let's put those to the side for a minute. And the Detroit Lions were a decent little football team. So unless they take kind of a significant step back, it's going to be hard for the Bears to win a ton more games. That said, I still see them as being highly competitive, probably better in close games, better at games at Soldier Field, you know, being able to close out a fourth quarter with a big drive, you know, and we just didn't see those long drives last year. We didn't see those productive drives. We saw them lose games in which they settled for field goals and things like that. Maybe a more aggressive approach from Matt Nagy and Mark Helfrich and, you know, a year two Mitch Trubisky with confidence. You never know in this league. You know, Aaron Rodgers could go down again. I mean, maybe the Cousins thing doesn't work out. I'm not saying they're going to win the division, but the Bears might be able to steal a few victories that we can't really realistically project right now.
Well, I'm sure Bears fans would probably take a couple division wins at this point, or at least stay competitive and make games relevant into November and December. So any step forward is, you know, is well welcomed in Chicago. I mean, we're already in OTAs and people are buzzing about this team. It's hard to really get any kind of grasp from OTAs at this point, but have we learned anything that might give us a clue of what this team's actually going to be like in 2018? Are we going to see a completely revamped offense where it's not, you know, run, run, pass, keep banging your head against the wall kind of thing? Have we learned anything from OTAs that might give us kind of a view into what 2018 might be like?
Yeah, it's hard. Obviously, there's restrictions, and I haven't truthfully been out there yet. I was supposed to go the other day, had a little bit of a stomach bug, so I had to miss, but you know, there's obviously restrictions on what media members can tweet during practice in terms of, you know, formations and personnel packages and strategies or any of that stuff. But I think it's fair to say, and it's pretty simplistic, but you look at the snapshot of what the Kansas City Chiefs offense was last year, where Matt Nagy came from, and obviously before that, his roots with Andy Reid. You're going to see more shotgun, more first down passing, more use of the tight ends and backs in the passing game. You know, those bunch formations were so great for the Chiefs last year. And they were creative with them, too. You know, moving guys around in terms of, you know, double team blocks on the perimeter, things like that. You know, kind of misdirection plays where, you know, the line looks like it's blocking down to the right and they throw back to the left. And you get a player like Tariq Cohen in space or Taylor Gabriel or, you know, the new tight end from Philly. I mean, there's just going to be a lot of movement that I think is going to excite people in the passing game. They're going to create ways for Mitch Trubisky to have easy throws. And, you know, I think just at least having some hope for a deep threat, whether it's Gabriel, whether it's Allen Robinson, assuming his, you know, ACL is fully healed, it doesn't mean you're going to be throwing deep every play. It means you're going to be stretching the field and then working the underneath when the coverage dictates that. So, you know, those are the kind of differences that I think they just weren't able to do last year. So, yes, bringing in a new staff helps that. But it's also some of this new personnel as well. I mean, you got to factor in that, look, they didn't have a Trey Burton last year. They didn't have an Allen Robinson last year. You know, I think some of this is going to be, you know, Cohen in year two is going to be a more confident player and maybe a better utilized player as well.
Well, we know there's a lot of buzz about this team, and I know fans are getting really excited. Sometimes, maybe I'm just I'm cynical about some things, but I'm more along the lines of let's pump the brakes and see what we got whenever we see it on the field. So, what are some of the big concerns going with some for the Bears this year? I know there's some depth at the outside linebacker position. I'm sure they want to work through to see what they got. There is some unknowns when it comes to the offense. We got to see what Trubisky can do in his second year. We got to see about the health on the defense. We got to see if Leonard Floyd is healthy. I guess if you had to nail down one concern that the Bears should really be thinking about, or that fans should be thinking about, what would that concern be?
Yeah, I think you outlined a few of them right there. Where's the pass rush going to come from? Is Leonard Floyd going to be a big part of that? You know, and obviously he's been I don't want to say a tease player, but a player who's kind of tantalized us with his upside. But, you know, concussions and injuries, just sort of limitations as far as him taking that next step have been there. And, you know, this is a big year three for him. This is where he should step forward. You see those moments of greatness from him. I saw him in camp last year and thought he looked outstanding. I thought, wow, this is the guy who's embarking on a 12-sack season. Well, it didn't quite work out that way, but I don't think anyone's down on him. I think they just want to see it, and they want to see it for 16 games. So that's probably the biggest thing. And then, you know, I guess who's bookending him? Is it Aaron Lynch? Is it somebody we don't know about yet? You know, is there somebody a little bit farther down the depth chart? I call him Iggy because I can't really pronounce his last name, but the fourth rounder out of Western Kentucky. He's an interesting player. Again, I don't know what he's going to add in year one beyond special team stuff, but the staff does seem to like him. So where does that pressure come from? Because this has a chance, I think, and I'd love to hear what you guys think, but I think this has a chance to be Vic Fangio's first great defense in Chicago. They were very good at times last year, you know. But this could be, with an ample pass rush and enough development in the secondary, a great defense. It could be top five in a lot of categories, top 10 in most, and those are the things that ultimately really matter.
Oh, for sure. And I don't think you'd find an analyst on this radio network that would disagree that this has the potential to be a top five defense. But the bugaboo for this squad for the last 3-4 years has just been injuries upon injuries upon injuries. I don't know what they're putting in the water in Chicago, but for some reason it makes your soft tissue just rip apart, I guess, whenever you take a sip of it. So I guess if it comes down to health, and I know that's not some kind of prophetic statement, but for the Bears, right, it seems like it's been something that is really, really damaged them in the last couple of years. We're talking to Eric Edholm. He's an NFL writer for ProFootballWeekly.com. You talked a little bit about those rule changes possibly being some of the biggest storylines in the NFL. I want to talk about some of those because I don't know if anyone's really delved into this deeply yet or they really thought about it. Let's talk about the catch rule, the revised standard for a catch. Can we finally put to rest? Do we know what the hell a catch is yet, or are we still going to be talking about this in the middle of the season?
I suspect we will, only because it's new and, you know, the competition committee, I feel like, justifies its own existence by changing rules every year. But in this case, I haven't heard a lot of people, and maybe I'm tuning some of these folks out, I don't know, but I haven't heard a lot of people say, like, okay, this is a clear step backward. This is an awful rule, or this is never going to work. The idea was to simplify the rule, right? You know, controlling the ball, 2 feet or some other body part inbounds, you know, taking that football move, such as the third step, you know, whatever, reaching for out of bounds or the line to gain or whatever it is, you know, those kind of clear delineations as opposed to surviving the ground. I mean, whoever heard of that term before knew what that meant. I'd love to, you know, for me, everybody says preseason's terrible and I get it, but I like to use those 4 games or in the Bears case, 5 games as kind of a measuring stick for some of these rule changes. And I think it's a good for the coaches and for the referees too, to work out the kinks, to see how these are going to be officiated, to see, you know, are we going to see, this catch rule truly put to work in the preseason? You know, are we going to see some of the head-on collision stuff truly ruled on properly in the preseason, or is it going to be a feeling out process? So it's hard for me to really know what it's going to look like, but I do feel like at least on that rule, you have some sort of clarity, and there's always going to be arguments about what a football move is and all that stuff. But, you know, it did feel like they had added too many words to the rule book and gotten away from the spirit of what a catch actually is.
Well, they're hoping to put to rest one big debate, but could they possibly open up a brand new one with this 15-yard penalty for lowering your head to initiate or make contact with a helmet? Because to me, there's still a lot of unanswered questions about this rule, and are we looking at the same chaos with this rule that we are trying to avoid with the catch rule? Are we just going to keep throwing out these Pandora box rules and hopefully they kind of just sort themselves out?
Yeah, and, you know, as you guys know, you watch college football, there's always going to be somebody tweeting or throwing their remote against the wall anytime one of these targeting calls is enacted. And you see, you want to strangle the nearest human being when you, what is happening here? But the spirit of the rule was, okay, we want to make this safer. You know, this is a lower level of football, that sort of thing. Okay, understood. It's, in my mind, taken too far or too extreme a punishment. With the NFL, as you mentioned, it's still a stiff punishment here, and there is the possibility of ejection. That always exists. It's got to be clear and overwhelming, and I suspect we're not going to get a lot of those calls. I don't think we're going to see, especially with offensive players, more going to be defensive guys, but if we see a Vontaze Burfict-like hit, should it result in an ejection? Yeah, probably, right? I mean, we all know there's a line, and you can't cross it. It's happened before. I think that's good. I think there's a good possibility of, hey, we want to remove as many of these plays in the game. We all love football. We don't want to see this thing go away in 20 years, right? So You know, I guess I'm the same way with the other rule, which is I kind of have to see how it's called for a while. Do I think everything is with good intention? Yeah. But the first time, let's say, Jordan Howard goes in the hole, lowers his head, and buries Blake Martinez, are they flagging that? That's, I guess, what I want to know. That's the biggest thing, is maybe the offensive side of the ball, because those guys are still subject to that as well.
Without a doubt. And I think what the NFL is trying to do is limit this. They're in kind of a rough spot because they're trying to make the game safer, but people are also being turned off because they have no idea what the rules are, and it seems like they're just subjectively picking when and where they want to actually enforce these rules. And I guess that leads into my next question. Now there could be there's permission for the command center to eject players, and can we really trust, you know, the senior vice president of officiating with that added responsibility of ejecting players? Now we're talking about guys actually leaving the game, guys that have a big impact on the game, and maybe this is a subjective call where the referee's like, yeah, that's enough, or they decide up in the command center that, oh, that's enough to send them out, and all of a sudden this is having a big effect on games. Is this really, I mean, I know that they're trying to make the game safer, but is this going to make it any more watchable?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, that's the question I have. And if we see those Burfict-like situations come up, and I just use him as an example because he's been kind of a multiple offender. And you know,
we all use him as an example.
Oh, sure. Yeah, he's the first guy in my Rolodex. And you know, it used to be Brandon Merriweather, and there were other guys who were kind of branded as those hitmen or whatever you want to call them. Yeah, I don't know. And I guess, obviously, anytime there's a close game or it's a fourth quarter or a division game or any of these type of situations, or, heck, if it's the first play of the game. You know, I remember watching a college game a few years ago, literally the first play of the game, there was a fade down the right sideline. It was an SEC game. The Florida defensive back came in and made what I thought was a fantastic play to break up the pass, but he just clipped kind of the bottom of the helmet and knocked the receiver, you know, 5 yards out of bounds. To me, it was a fantastic play. With his helmet a little bit high, but he got ejected for that. Again, I don't know if the college rule, you know, I don't know if it's going to be enforced as strictly as what they do in college. I think they're way erring on the side of caution on that. I think the NFL will be a little bit more judicious on that. But what you have to mention, Al Riveron is now going into his second year. He had a rough first year as the head of officials. You know, a lot of people criticized him for various things. You also have three prominent officials who have retired this year. You have kind of a new overturn of the referees this year. There's some college guys coming in, some SEC refs, some other Big Ten ref is coming in to coach in the to referee in the NFL this year. You never know. A lot of new blood. People see things differently. They're coached differently. They're taught differently. Maybe we're getting a little close to what the college game has brought us.
And then I think that the fans are getting somewhat turned off because I think that the common train of thinking is that the NFL is trying to maybe cover their butts legally down the line with some of this stuff.
Yeah.
And I unfortunately for the fans, it's about player safety, and I get that, and I think we should try to make the game as safe as possible. The fans are saying, well, at the same time, you're taking away a game that I really like, and you're making all these alterations to it, and I don't actually get to see who plays the best, because it comes down to when and where the referee's going to blow the whistle on a key point of the game. So we'll see how this kind of sifts out. But I'm gonna shift gears real quick. I'm gonna put you on the spot. If I had to say, Eric, over under 7 wins for the Bears this year, what are you saying?
I'm tempted to say over, and I realize that it takes a little bit of faith, as I said, because of the strength of the division. You know, because right now, until proven otherwise, we're talking about Mitch Trubisky as the fourth best quarterback in the division. I think the defense will be good. We're assuming the special teams will be better. But you have a new, you know, two new coordinators there, a new Chris Tabor and Brock Oliva are the new, you know, coaches on that side of the ball. You have a new kicker. You know, there's been some punting questions. You know, if you expand Cohen's role on offense, does he still get the commensurate touches on special teams, that sort of thing? You know, there's a lot of what ifs, and you got to have depth players to obviously help those units. So all that being said, I mean, you know, 7, I think they have a chance to be an 8-8 or 9-7 team. Again, that's going to require a few things kind of bouncing their way. I don't know that maybe Detroit is as good as You know, they could take a step back. And I love Stafford. I think Matthew Stafford's a great quarterback. I really do. And I think Matt Patricia could be a very good head coach in time. But it wouldn't shock me to see them take a little step back. I also don't think – I think the Vikings could actually be a better team than they were last year. But are they going to go 13-3 again? Wasn't that their record? I mean, that's
hard to
lot.
Replicate, you know, that.
Yeah, and the Steelers were 13-3, and I look at them, and I'm like, you know, they kind of played like a 10-6 team. Like, you know, the
yeah,
Bears beat them, and I try not to look too much at win totals, or if I do, I say to myself, the Vikings could win a Super Bowl and go 11-5. So that said, I think I would go over that 7 for the Bears. I like that.
I think Bears fans will be pretty happy with that in Matt Nagy's first year to be able to take a step at 8-8, maybe 9-7, kind of what you saw with the Philadelphia Eagles, take that one step up, and then you kind of move into Super Bowl in 2 years. No, let's not get ahead of ourselves. But we're talking to Eric Edholm, NFL writer for ProFootballWeekly.com. Eric, tell us about your new podcast over at Pro Football Weekly and how people can connect with you.
Yeah, Arthur Arkish and I do it most of the time. Sometimes Hubs jumps in as well. We try to get guests every now and then to kind of spice things up and get different perspectives. So we're kind of going division by division now. We're working our way through the AFC. We're actually going to record one on Friday here. Look at the AFC South, which is an interesting division. It could be one of those, you know, weird years in that division again. So, yeah, every week we have a new one, and we've got a lot of good content going up as the summer comes near. We've got a Bears preview magazine going to go to press at the end of the summer. I think people will be very excited about as well. So a lot of good stuff at ProFootballWeekly.com.
Awesome. If somebody wants to yell at you on Twitter, what do they type in?
I'm going to mute them. That's what I'm going to do. No, I'm kidding. It's ERIC_Edholm, Edholm. And please be kind. You know, there's so much junk on Twitter these days. Let's try to keep it a little clean, right?
I couldn't agree more. Eric, we're talking Eric Edholm, NFL writer for ProFootballWeekly.com. Eric, thank you so much for coming on Buffon 55. I really appreciate it. And hopefully we can have you back on sometime.
Have a great weekend, fellas.
Hey, you too. Thank you. That was Eric Edholm, NFL writer, ProFootballWeekly.com. Knows his stuff. That's I can say that to say the least. So now that Eric's moved on, we're going to go into the regular format, Buffon 55. And for that, I'm going to need my trusty producer, Aldo Gandia. Aldo, are you with me?
I am with you. That was a great interview. And Eric is sadly mistaken to keep it clean with the people who follow us at the barroom.
I would say barroom. Good luck.
Before I get to the five questions I have for you, John, how are you? And what's been your spring or summer, whatever season we're in? How's it been going? John, are you there?
In June, we start talking about OTAs and all of a sudden mini camps and then training camps coming up. You start getting that itch around June, don't you? You start thinking about, the depth chart's going to be out. We're going to see a couple practices with Allen Robinson and Mitch Trubisky, see how that chemistry works. I'm getting ready. I'm amped up. I'm ready for week one right now.
Excellent. I am too. I noticed I'm getting a little rough around the edges, a little,
a little haggard.
Yeah, I need some football games that mean something. I need to see guys collide against one another, and I need to see that Bear uniform in action. I just miss it so much. All right, let's get to our five questions. The first one, the biggest concern about the Chicago Bears is their outside pass rush. The guys in the chat room here and on MixLR.com have been talking about it, and John Santucci actually reminded us that we should go over to BearsBarroom.com. He wrote a really good article about where Vic Fangio can generate this pass rush. But nonetheless, back to the question, the issue from the team's questions regarding their pass rush have to do with the outside linebacker position. And Vic Fangio talked to the media this week, and he offered this candid evaluation.
Well, obviously, Leonard just started practicing this week where we're allowing him to do some 7-on-7 drills. Expect him to be full speed and ready to go at training camp. We've got Lynch here. We've got Sam. And then we've got the three young guys that are working with them also. There is a little bit of question there of depth and depth quality. But we're confident that the guys we have there, somebody will surface to be the two starters and the couple backups that we need.
That doesn't sound too
What too a confident. Ringing endorsement.
John, where is your level of confidence that the Bears have the necessary personnel at the outside linebacker position to improve on their 42 sacks from a year ago? And John, as always, you are on the clock. You've got 55 seconds. Go.
I'm somewhat confident. I don't think I'm thinking out of the box here, but obviously it comes down to health. Floyd has to stay healthy or the outside linebacker position is going to crumble. I mean, one of those guys is going to be serviceable. Maybe Lynch comes in and he's a force opposite side. Maybe Fitz comes in and he puts his injury pass behind him and he explodes onto the scene as a rookie. The opportunities are going to be there, but if Leonard Floyd gets hurt, if he goes down, then you have to rely on two of those guys playing well. And guess what? I don't love that. Now, the question is, are they going to improve on those 42 sacks from a year ago? And I still say yes, regardless, because another year of Vic Fangio means everyone is going to get better. That includes the secondary, who is most likely going to make the quarterback hold on to the ball a little bit longer. The defensive line is going to be better. They're going to get more pressure up front. And then, of course, you addressed the inside linebacker position, and it's going to be better tenfold. So maybe outside of that outside linebacker position, you have everybody else playing well, and you're able to improve on those 42 sacks. But how confident am I in the outside linebacker position? I'm only as confident as Leonard Floyd's body is. And to that, I'm a little shaky, and I can't be overly confident in it.
John, I told you that I miss football, but boy, oh boy, I miss your energy and responses to questions. Just listening to you again has me fired up. Great job.
I told you I'm ready to go. I'm ready to go.
You are indeed. All right, question number two. Matt Nagy spoke about the progression of Allen Robinson, who finally got to practice this week, but he did say that next week during the mandatory workouts, Robinson would be held back from team drills. What's your level of concern that the 24-year-old Robinson will recover 100% from this torn ACL he suffered in his left knee last season at the very first week? Tell me what your concern is, and you are on the clock.
Now, listen, I'm confident. I'm very confident that he's going to bounce back and he's going to be a great player. However, I beg Bears fans to be patient, which I know is not an easy task and not an easy ask, but it is necessary. All of the hype that he's getting is that he's going to come into the league and he's going to come into this year and he's going to light up cornerbacks starting week one at Green Bay, and maybe he will. I hope he does, but let's pump the brakes a little bit. He's coming off of a serious knee injury. He hasn't played in a real game in over a year. And, you know, he's with a new team, a new system, a new quarterback. So the first three or four games may not be, you know, fantasy football gold mines if you take him in the second round of your fantasy football league. But as the season goes on, he's going to get more comfortable. He's going to get more adjusted. We're going to see him coming out and build a relationship and some real chemistry with Mitch Trubisky. So I have to ask everyone to please be patient, and I expect to be really well impressed. I expect that he's going to be a great player for the Bears, but you have to be patient because he has a lot of stuff going against him right now.
Great answer. I totally agree with you. Patience is important. We may not see the true Allen Robinson until that midpoint of the season where, you know, he's showing that cutting ability and separation skills. It's going to take a little while. So I hope that I agree with you. I hope that fans are patient and don't get down on him. All right. Question number three. Roquan Smith has been getting most of his work with the backup unit to the starters, but there's very little doubt, at least in my mind, that by the time the Bears face the Packers in week one on Sunday Night Football, Smith will be alongside Danny Trevathan. Now, how good do you anticipate this duel will be this season? You're on the clock, John.
Although I love this duo, to me, it's the perfect blend. Trevathan, he's been there. He's a Super Bowl champion, and now he's the quarterback of the Bears defense. He's a cerebral guy who plays hard, and he wants to win. We know he wants to win. Enter Roquan Smith, all of the physical tools imaginable, plus linebacking instincts off the charts, measured very well in everything. So like all rookies, though, he needs a mentor to learn how to be a professional. He needs somebody to teach him how to go about his business. And I think Trevathan is a guy that will really relish that role, help him turn into the force that we all think he's going to be. So these two guys are going to be so disruptive. And like I said earlier, they're going to increase the sack total as well because they're going to be such a force on the inside. So regardless, no matter who is on the opposite side of Leonard Floyd at outside linebacker, the middle is so solid that it's going to create opportunities and kind of form that whole base of the defense. So how excited am I for this? Very excited, in case you haven't noticed from the tone of my voice.
Oh, thanks for bringing that up. Yeah, I didn't notice. All right. Now, the media asked Matt Nagy about Jordan Howard and whether the team needs a back like him, who is a workhorse, a bell cow type. And this was Nagy's response.
In this offense, I think it's more game specific as to whether or not you need that. Again, you want to be able to have multi-dimensional backs, meaning a guy that can run the football, and maybe his strength is running and not a route runner, or you have a guy that's vice versa. When you have a multitude of guys that can do those things, one of the things I believe in is trying to really hone in on what their weaknesses are, or what we perceive their weaknesses to be for each player. And then try to really work on that right now in the offseason. And we all know he can run the football, so he fits well in this offense.
Now, how do you see Howard fitting into Nagy's offense, and what kind of production do you anticipate? John, you're on the clock.
Well, to an extent, I think he fits. Now, what that means to me, it sounds like Nagy is saying we're not going to just put in Jordan Howard for the sake of putting in Jordan Howard. So one could surmise that he's obviously going to cut into some of his productivity. He's not going to go into every game getting 20 to 25 carries, although sometimes the game plan will call for that. Now, a lot of people were questioning whether or not Howard fit into this offense because of what they're trying to do, and some said he could even be traded. But I think that it's going to be on a game-by-game basis. If the game plan calls for outside tosses or swing passes, you're not going to see Jordan Howard in there. You're not necessarily going to see him in there for 20 to 25 carries, running it up the middle, you know, beating the hell out of himself like we saw last year, which, to an extent, I guess, is refreshing, giving the past coaching staff that just said, you know what, let's just run it up the gut two or three times and then punt it, and let's give the guy 30 carries and see if he can still walk off the field at the end. So it is a little refreshing to see that, and I don't think Matt Nagy's the kind of guy who's going to put somebody in just because of what a depth chart says. So I think you will see some a hit to the productivity, but it's not because he's not playing well. It's because he's going to go on a case-by-case basis.
I listened to that soundbite now, I think it's six or seven times now, and I think the biggest thing I got out of it is that they are going to really work with Jordan Howard on his pass catching skills. To me, you know, he sort of shifted his response in the middle of it, talking about, you know, well, we need, you know, it depends on the game, you know, how many times he's going to get the ball and so forth. And then in the middle of the response, he said, you know, we look at players' weaknesses, and then we're going to work on them during the offseason to help eliminate that weakness. And so I think that the message there is for Jordan Howard, get over to the jugs machine when you're not on the field and improve your hands. I don't see it any other way than that. At first I wrote you and said, what the hell does this mean? This soundbite is kind of all over the place. But after listening to it a number of times, I think, you know, he's basically saying, I want Jordan Howard out there, but he's got to be able to catch the ball.
At the end, if their game plan says we got to attack the outside, or we're going to try to make the short passing game the running game and try to kind of chip away at people, you need a running back that can catch the ball. And I'm not saying that he's completely stone hands, but when you have a guy like Tariq Cohen there, that you'd much rather be throwing him the ball. So if I'm sure you want Howard in there as much as possible, but if he doesn't fit some kind of game plan in some different week, don't be surprised if he goes from 21 carries one week to maybe 8 the next week, or you're going to see a dip and then a spike. So I guess we'll see, but that's kind of what I got out of that.
The chairman of your fan club, Bendris Gula, just said that Howard still catches the ball better than Josh Bellamy.
I catch the ball better than Josh Bellamy.
Very good. All right, the fifth and final question here on Buffon 55. I'm really looking forward to hearing your response on this one. Pick five games from the Bears' 2018 schedule that today you feel are you're most ready to see happen. These are the games that you're most anticipating to see. John, you're on the clock.
I don't know if I can get all these in 55 seconds, but opening night, prime time, game at Green Bay. Let me set the scene. The revamped Bears, led by Mitchell Trubisky and head coach Matt Nagy, go into Lambeau to clash with Aaron Rodgers and the hated Packers. The Bears show up in Green Bay, and they show the rest of the NFL that they're no longer a doormat in the NFC North, and they start the season off with a statement win. Love that game. Then week 7, that's October 21st, at home against New England. I'm not saying Chicago will be as good as the Patriots, but I love to have those games that actually show what your team is made of, to show a good barometer of where you're at. Then week 16, that's the 23rd of December, that's at the 49ers. For some reason, this whole Jimmy G and, you know, the Lynch hoodwink pace into the Trubisky trade, and I mean, for some reason that's become a narrative. So I want to go to San Francisco. I want to bust up San Francisco and the 49ers, show them that Trubisky was the right guy to go up and get. Then week 11 against Minnesota, the Vikings are supposed to be the toast of the town. They could be a Super Bowl favorite. I don't necessarily buy into that. And if you want to be the best, you got to beat the best. So let's start smacking some people in the mouth in the NFC North and stop kind of getting away from these ones. I'm not done yet. I'm going to week 14. That's the 9th of December. That's against the Rams. That defense is supposed to be impenetrable. Let's see. I'm tired of looking forward to games where we're playing the Browns or the Bears are playing the Jets. I'm tired of looking at the schedule and say, let's look for the scrubs because at least we might be able to win those. I want to see an entire schedule where I can see the Bears beat good teams, where they can be competitive against good teams, where they're actually one of the better teams in the league. And that leads me to week 17 against the Vikings at Minnesota. You know why I'm looking forward to that game? Because I want it to mean something. I want it to be something other than just saying, well, who cares if we win? I'm tired of being indifferent. I want to say this win could clinch home field. This win could clinch the division. This game might actually get us into a wild card berth. I don't want to be indifferent where I'm thinking, well, I'd like them to win, but if they lose, they get a much better draft pick. I am tired of week 17 meaning nothing. So I'm looking forward to that game because I want it to mean something.
I wish I had a sound effect of applause right now. Great answer. Great show, John. Why don't you take us to the close?
All right. Well, hey, next week on Bears Barroom Radio Network, Bears Hour Live with Draft Dr. Phil returns on Monday night at 9 p.m. Central Time. Bears 100 Proof will have a new raunchy Gab Fest on Wednesday morning. I'm looking forward to that one. And on Friday, Aldo will have a Bears on Tap for you to recap the mandatory training camp that begins next Tuesday and lasts through Thursday. Now, me, personally, I hope to be back in late July, just before the start of camp, to preview the upcoming season. But before then, I might just stop by 100 Proof and have a drink with the fellas. So keep your ears to the ground there. I might be popping up sooner than you think. But you can follow me on Twitter, yell at me at JD Buffone. This has been another edition of Buffone 55. Thank you for tuning in. We'll see you next time.